meeting of the Warramungo Shire Council for 2019. And please turn off mobile telephones, please.
Mr. Mayor, I'd just like to remind councillors and members of the public that these meetings are recorded, so those people who are using the public forum session, if you could please refrain from making any defamatory remarks. Thank you.
Acknowledgement of country. Council acknowledges that the Gomeroi people, the traditional custodians of this land, which this meeting has been held, pay respect to the elders both past and present of the Gomeroi Nation, and extend that respect to the other Aboriginal people who are present. Today we have, in the forum, we've got Maria Deep, DAs for the Cowinda Development Group, Sally Edwards, School of Youth and Community Centre Request, Transfer, Maureen Salter, Aboriginal Protocol, Jane Judd, Draft DD Strategy, Greg Piper, Liverpool Plains Wind Farm CVA. I'd call on Maria Deep to come and address the meeting, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, councillors, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maria Deep and my address is 336 Pearly Wall Road, Coonabarabran. I am a pharmacist and I have been a resident of this shire since 1984 when my husband and I purchased the pharmacy across the road. We owned and operated this pharmacy for 32 years until 2016 when we sold it to the current owners. I am also the current Cowinda Board President and I'm here this afternoon to request that the Warrambungal Shire Council give consideration to a waiver on the fees associated with our DA for the refurbishment of the Cowinda Nursing Home. As we are all aware, Australia's population is ageing. You will also be aware that due to our generally higher standard of healthcare, people are living longer, and as people progress well into their 80s and 90s, there will be a large number of people requiring aged care services in our community. We also need to consider that in 40 years' time, the number of dementia sufferers will double. Currently at Cowinda, we provide care for just over 100 people in our residential facilities, and a similar number are cared for in their own home under the Aged Care Support Program. Cowinda provides an important service to this community, as it is currently the only facility in our district that provides all levels of aged care up to hospitalisation. However, some parts of our facility are over 40 years old and are in need of updating. An example of this is that currently we have some wards in the nursing home with three beds per room in close proximity to each other. This is no longer a desirable proposition for the majority of our residents. The refurbishment that we are planning will mean that all residents will have their own room. Another factor that needs consideration is that aged care offers the biggest opportunity for growth in employment in our shire. Currently, Cowinda provides all support services such as food preparation, laundry and property maintenance. These services employ over 100 locals and as such, Cowinda is the second largest employer in the district. If a corporate operator such as Bupa were to take over our facilities, some of these services would inevitably be outsourced to somewhere outside the shire. As you are probably aware, Cowinda is a not-for-profit, community-owned organisation. This offers the prospect of more efficient use of government funding, providing better care and lower entry costs than a corporate provider. However, I do need to emphasise that Cowinda runs on a knife edge with funding and depends on high occupancy to make it work. But Cowinda will struggle with maintaining occupancy if we can't offer equivalent accommodation standards compared to other regional centres such as Gunnedah. If occupancy drops, Cowinda would become non-viable and we would be faced with selling the facility to a corporate provider with subsequent loss of local jobs due to outsourcing of services. The Warrambungal Shire Council has a great opportunity to help right now by waiving the fees associated with our current refurbishment project. In doing so, it will recognise the importance of Cooinda and the challenge of aged care generally to our whole community and make an investment in the future. Every dollar saved in our development costs will be invested into providing a better facility. This in turn will bolster our viability and ensure that we have modern facilities for our elderly residents. I would respectfully remind councillors that the legislation underpinning council's own Section 94A levy plan only stipulates that council may impose fees up to a maximum of 1% of the cost of the project. They do not remove council's right to waive fees if they believe it is in the community interest. My understanding of the DA, council will not need to provide any further infrastructure in order for Cooinda's refurbishment project to go ahead. With this in mind, I would urge all councillors to give due consideration to our request and waive the DA fees.
Any councillors got any questions for Maria? Next speaker will be Sally Edwards, Cooley Youth Community Group, request to transfer lots 12DP986752 to council ownership.
Youth and Community Centre Committee write to you and address you today to request consideration by Warrumbungle Shire Council to accept a transfer of community property. The property being the Cooley Youth and Community Centre Hall located off Lot 1 and 2 DP986752. The CYCC Hall is the only community hall available in Cooley to the public. The Cooley Shire Hall is the home of the public library and the Volunteer Visitor Information Centre and Gallery. The Central School Hall has limitations to what it can be used for by the public. The CYCC Hall sits on two adjacent lots, being Lot 1 and 2, Deposited Plan 986952. CYCC has been in collaboration with the Cooler Men Shed Group for over 12 months now. They are actively looking for a space to construct their men's shed, store their equipment and conduct their activities. It is proposed that this land continue to be community land owned by council, with the Cooler Men's Shed Group building a shed on the adjacent block to the hall with their own funds. Their group would then utilise the hall kitchen and amenities and contribute to the ongoing maintenance and management. Currently, the hall has regular community users aside from the CYCC, which has a number of financial members. There is an upholstery group, and the Central School regularly use this facility for HSC exams. Since the acoustic panelling has been installed, the hall has been utilised by organisations wishing to conduct workshops, such as local land services. There is also great demand from the community for a venue to hold private functions, such as birthdays and family reunions. Upcoming bookings to date for 2019 include private functions, upholstery from March 5-6, June 4-5 and September 10-11, and the Cooler Central School for their HSC trials and exams. With the CYCC committee wishing to focus all its energy on conducting youth activities and not on the running of a community hall, it would be appreciated if council gave consideration to accept the transfer of this property into full community hands as council property. It will enable the best long-term option for the community and the many groups who utilise the facility. The CYCC wish the land to remain a community asset according to the Local Government Act 1993 and not become operational land. I have attached some letters of support for our proposal and we do look forward to your favourable support of this transfer. From our letters of support, the Cooler Men's Shed has highlighted, the Cooler Men's Shed has been in limbo for some years but now wants to again redevelop itself and wants to also include women. Council's consideration of this transfer of community infrastructure is highly important for sustaining our small rural community. Outcomes for the community of this shared space include foster and grow the men's shed and its activities, increased ability to host youth activities and initiatives in the community, long-term sustainability of an important community venue, provide a community hall for hire for private functions and community workshops, and support the community through the provision of a shared space. NSHED has been contacted by Corrective Services to participate in their community services program. Unfortunately, we are unable to do so due to lack of room, facilities and equipment. Next letter of support from the Cooler District Development Group says the CDG sees this collaboration between the CYCC, the Cooler Menshed and Warrumbungle Shire Council to be valuable for the long-term future of the Cooler community and its community infrastructure. Senior Constable Keegan Tucker from the Cooler Police pleased to support the Cooler Youth and Community Centre in our endeavours to transfer the hall and land to Council's community property. Police believe that the work of the CYCC and Cooler Menshed cannot be underestimated in a small community. At a time when residents are being affected by issues such as drought, financial hardship and bullying, police have concerns for the mental health of residents. If Council are willing to consider the transfer of this important community infrastructure, police can see many positives for the community, including stronger community relationships between residents of all ages through a combined space, increased ability to hold community events and youth events, the growth of the Cooler Menshed, and increased community awareness and support issues affecting the community. Police believe that the joint venture with CYCC and the Cooler Menshed, with the assistance of Warrumbungle Shire Council, will be an extremely positive outcome for all the residents within the community. Kevin Humphreys. The CYCC are a volunteer-based group and the CYCC Hall is the only community hall available in the Cooler District. With regular users such as the Central School, Local Upholstery Group and the Cooler Menshed Group, it is imperative that Council give consideration to taking ownership of the property. The Cooler Upholstery Group. Our upholstery group has been in operation for 21 years. Our teacher, instructor, Peter Schultz, travels from Tamworth for classes in blocks of 3 days, three or four times per year. As well as being very practical and productive, these classes serve as a great get-together for many local rural men and women. Also during the prolonged drought, these classes have proved to be very therapeutic to all concerned. There are 10 participants in this group. The CYCC has proved to be an ideal venue for our classes. Our group are pleased to support the proposed transfer of CYCC Hall and land to Warrumbungle Shire Council for our local community. Our group is only one of many in the community who utilise these facilities. The proposed Menshed transfer to the CYCC site would be good for the community, and the prospect of maintenance to the building being carried out by the Menshed members would be beneficial. Cooler Central School PNC Rights. The Cooler Central School PNC are pleased to support the Cooler Youth and Community Centre in their endeavours to transfer the hall and land to Council's community property. The PNC think it's a fantastic endeavour to support the Cooler Menshed and their plans to collaborate with the CYCC and make this venue home to the Menshed, yet another vital community group. The CYCC Hall is a significant community facility for the Cooler community, with many groups utilising the facility, including our school students. We value this. And lastly, a letter from the Cooler and District Chamber of Commerce and Industry. We can see many benefits for the transfer of community property, and they are as follows. It gives peace of mind to the community at large that the asset will remain within the community. Better grant funding opportunity for the Cooler Youth and Community Centre. There is a high level of confidence in Council from the Cooler community. There is a vision that the local Menshed are going to utilise part of the land and use the hall facilities on a regular basis. The partnership that can be fostered between the organisations will prove mutually beneficial to all utilising the facilities. The Cooler Youth Hall has been utilised by a wide range of organisations, community members and friends over many years. It will be a valuable long-term asset for the Cooler community having the facility.
Any questions for Sally? Next speaker is Maureen Salter, Aboriginal Protocols at Public Meetings.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and fellow councillors. It's good to be here. This is a new arena for me today, as an Aboriginal elder of this community, and it's something that I wanted to bring to you people, and especially here on the agenda as Aboriginal protocols at meetings. Can I put that away? Because I did not say that it was at meetings. I want it for the community, and it's something that I really put forward. Is that okay?
Okay, yes.
So I'll just cross that out, and it's in our community. As an elder, it's been around for a long, long time, really. When you look at the 7th of August 1940, that works out to about 78 years. I was born at Burrabadee and grew up in that era where the values that were so very important to our people at Burrabadee and values respect, caring, sharing and unity. Very special one. Going back a couple of weeks ago on Saturday, 2 weeks ago, will be 3 weeks this Saturday. We've got our own burial ground out there at Burrabadee. It's an Aboriginal burial ground that has been protected by State Heritage for the last, not just the burial ground, the burial ground is protected by Cultural Heritage. That's National Parks and Wildlife Service. And there's a sign up on the gate that says that it is protected by this, and it was put in place, I think, by my son Brad when he was a ranger in the National Parks 15 years ago. What happened? My mother's grave was almost destroyed, and this is why I'm here. And protocols. I'm appealing to you people. Hers was the only grave, and she's a woman who's been dead for 21 years. She's one of the elders that went through the Stolen Generation and all of this, the protection policies of Lebanon and Aboriginal Reserve. I was very angry about this sort of thing, so I think this respect has to come back into communities. What better way than through Aboriginal protocols? Something that I feel is very important. I've mentioned it to State Heritage people who have been in touch with, and the Department of Aboriginal Affairs, Jason Adler, who's the executive there, and he feels that him and the other executive members on there feel that this would be something we have to get the respect back into this community because it's dying out. And I don't want to see another grave be desecrated like my mother's grave was. They're our elders in this community and we must respect these people. And set things in place. I know of other councils, Wagga Wagga to be precise. I didn't bring anything today. I did have all of this stuff ready, but because once I read through all of the stuff that had to be read through, I noticed that no names, so I'm not mentioning many names, right, in regards to this, but the disrespect in of elders has to go back to to how it was within values. And I'm just putting that forward to you people to see if there is a possibility of us getting protocols, Aboriginal protocols in place. I have a copy of the one from Wagga Wagga Shire, and I'm prepared to share that with you. Not now, I haven't got it here at the moment. To show you how protocols are. That way it means that our community is supporting us. I know they supported us going back 5 years ago when Warwick King came into the town and he shared the photographs up here up at the Information Centre. And The council is there to support Warwick in the Barbara Day things that were there, you know. I'm just putting that to you now and pleading with you, see, I don't want to ever see another get interfered with the way my mother's was.
One minute.
So if there's any way possible that we can work together to come up with something with respecting not just our elders, we respect our elders, I'm an elder myself now, we respect our elders, and I feel that respect, our values, I've noticed your values just over you, respect is one of them too. One of the council's values, well, it's one of the Millerai Nation's values. Respect, caring and sharing, and unity. It is should be speaking out more on this, and I'm sure I'd have bought all the paperwork. But I've only got half a minute left now, haven't I? But I think it's something that I'd like people to consider and think about, and think about their mothers and think, would you want that to happen to your mother? Wouldn't happen to anybody in this community. Thank you very much.
Anybody got any questions from Maureen?
Probably not a question, but just a statement, Maureen. You'll probably notice in the business paper, it's the first time we've got acknowledgement of the traditional custodians.
I've spoke to, what's his name, the manager?
Yep,
Roger. He came over, Roger. See, yep. I haven't been in here for well over 12 months or more. My last role coming in here was as an elder and doing the welcome to country for you, Roger. You know, you went here. So, but I mentioned to Roger about that. And I said, well, that's good. If you can do an acknowledgement of country, but could I add something to that too? It said the council acknowledges the Gomeroi people, the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet today or whenever it's going to be on the thing. On the land that we meet on here today or whatever. And we pay our respects to elders both past and present of the Gomeroi Nation, and extend that respect to other Aboriginal people who are present. It is, it's so very good. That's just an addition there I thought could be. Well, if you need to talk to me right now or something like that, I can give you some other details. Maybe I can come back another time for 5 minutes.
Thank you.
And probably just one more comment. When we do meet in Koola, because it is a different nation.
No, it's not.
Since when?
The MPS acknowledged it went to the Gilgandra and Coonabarabran Land Councils and to the overall body, and apparently it's here. I always thought it was as well.
I think on our signs they're going to have Wiradjuri down that end of that.
No. Only at Mandoran and Dunedoo who are, but Koola, apparently you've got to cross the river.
We'll work that out before
so
next
that
meeting.
So the NPS has got the language from
that's
up here.
That's another battle for another day.
Yes. Yeah.
I just got through the NPS.
I'm terribly sorry that happened to you, Maureen. I know how you feel because something similar happened to my dad's grave at the old cemetery up here. So it's terribly upsetting, and you feel terribly, terribly angry and terribly powerless that someone could do such a thing. But I think we can all do better. But hopefully, on a brighter note, I hope you don't mind that I gave the acknowledgement at the Australia Day ceremony at the golf club this year, and I pinched a bit of your welcome to country line, which I think is very beautiful, which is care for each other and care for the land. So I think if we if we all operate on those lines, I think we all go a lot better.
Yes, we all work together. accomplish the things. That's where my aim is now, with the Aboriginal language legislation, working with the government to get things happening. So thank you.
Thank you, Maureen. Next speaker will be Greg Piper on the Liverpool Clear Plains Wind Farm VPA.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'm Greg Piper from Coolah. I've been a resident there virtually all my life. What I was wanting to speak to about today was the VPA, the Voluntary Planning Agreement, that the Council has put together with EPA. for those who may not be aware, the Voluntary Planning Agreement was delivered the final draft that's coming before Council today is a much improved agreement than the initial. Get here and with this improved document. We are operating in a time of unequalled mistrust in our governments, in our institutions at all levels. Establishment of public trust in our institutions is essential for our modern democracy. Issues are transparency, accountability, and consultation are the marks of a modern democracy. Although the outcomes of this final VPA are reasonable, the process of getting here has been accompanied by processes that could be described as unhelpful at best, and in some cases but if you want to ask questions you can. My question is, without the attention of Judy Jones, now, Judy Jones, for those who don't know her, is a Associate Professor of Law at ANU. Came into the frame after the submission, after the VPA draft was put out, and she too, like I, was a bit appalled. And I guess my question is, without her intervention and very detailed work, question, I think not. Next question is, the community have to get high profile legal advice every time some significant development. Certainly, the development group that I'm a part of certainly can't afford the sort of detailed analysis of every piece of stuff that comes before council. Surely a more transparent, consultative approach is warranted. This VPA process should have been a cooperative process of council and community working together to get the best outcomes for the constituents of Coolah and Castle. The submissions that was put together, and I should outline, I've been part of the Epuron Liverpool Range Community Consultative Committee over the last 5 years. And invited to join that in the understanding that local people there to be to make sure there was a good outcome for the community. And so we went along to, I think, some last meeting when Council and Epuron came up with this, believing that our time, why were we here for all these meetings when we were just Council and Epuron, no input, not being consulted, and actually being hoodwinked, I guess, in some of the processes that went on, and it left a very sour note with most of the people who are on there. I'll say too much more about that, but can I conclude by quoting from the submission from the Local Government of New South Wales Association? That's the New South Wales Department of Planning and Environment on improving VPAs. This is from page. Local Government, New South Wales, strongly support public engagement in the VPA process. It is essential to the community is advised and consulted on new VPA proposals and any material changes to existing is key to ensuring sound agreements that deliver real public benefit. It also delivers transparency and reinforces probity. Given the complex, it's important that information is presented to the public in a manner friendly to the layperson and the information is read. That's from the Local Government Association. Things to finish off with. When these submissions acknowledgement of the submissions that we put in from Council, I had to ring up and ask if Council got my submission. I requested that the advice that we be advised when the VPA was going to be presented to Council. I was not advised. I tried to find the business papers on Monday morning, or Monday evening actually, nothing on the site. Mr. Chairman, communication, transparency, accountability, inclusiveness are all important for effective, inclusive government. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Greg, anybody got any questions for Greg? Councillor Doolan?
Greg, what's the community think about the project as a whole, notwithstanding your worries there?
The project as a whole, the community are very supportive of. I guess the VPA is just voluntary planning agreement put in to give, to make sure the broader community got something out of the development, not the concept is very good. Fortunately, New South Wales has been behind the eight ball as far as its planning department goes and bringing a lot of the stuff we were doing was a bit new, and the PCC that I was on, we looked at all sorts of things, and one of the things we looked at were options to manage the community enhancement fund. State government, their preference is for a 355, and that's fair enough. And we were looking at what other people had done across the state, across Australia, with regarding wind farms, and also internationally. Anyway, the new one that is presented here is a far. Someone's put a lot of work on council side into revamping this. I don't know who the legal people were, but I don't think that would have happened unless we had Judy Jones.
Just for everyone's benefit, Judith Jones, her family are Coolah based, and she has a financial interest in the area as well. It's not just a random professor.
You know, they were just my concerns.
Any more questions for Greg? Councillor Nunty?
I know this almost sounds like it's a done deal, but what has your community contemplated with respect to energy storage and energy security with respect regarding this project?
I guess that's a bit outside the realms of a VPA. Certainly in the bigger picture of energy reduction, and there are other companies at the moment looking in the Coolah area. There could be a possibility of another 200 turbines or above the 250 odd that's planned in this. Some of them are looking at things like pumped hydro. Yeah, I think that the whole idea of storage and stuff, that'll be a state or federal.
What about clearing the windmills once they're out of date?
Decommissioning is a big issue, and I think what's going to have to happen is that this will be a government. They will have to, a bit like the mining sector, they're requiring the mining companies to put money into a fund so that they can't just go broke and nick off and leave a big hole in the ground. I think the same sort of thing may happen for the decommissioning. Make sure that they do, you know, and if you look at that, it goes fast and what have you. It's a bit of a. Now, when I was speaking to them about it, I said to me that probably the big issue will be if we have some major technological breakthrough, as in fusion power or something, and that wind power. At the moment, they're responsible for the removal of back to a ground level.
For you, Mr. Mayor, it's actually in the land host contracts, the decommissioning, and if a turbine is inactive for a certain period, they have to decommission the whole tower, and it's to below ground level. They can't pull out the big, basically cement plug holding it to the ground, but you have a metre of soil put over that at the end of life. And we have things in the contract trying to protect us from a company going bust, but you can never say never.
Point of order, Mr. Mayor, shouldn't pecuniary interests be declared?
It will be when it's called for, but I won't be in the room for the vote. But you asked the question, I'm explaining the protection to you.
I find it a difficult one. A regulation. Yeah. Certainly she shouldn't be there for the voting of it, but to me, if someone's got information to give to you.
The next speaker will be Jane Judd, please. Draft the EGP strategy, and now it remains related energy and climate.
Chair, Councillor, General Public. I'm Jane Judd, a long-term resident of the Coonabarabran area. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on the Warrumbungle Shire Economic Development and Tourism Strategy. Though there are useful ideas in this strategy, signs of a forward-looking climate and renewable energy policy are meagre. The report looks backwards to dying industries. Coal and coal seam gas are industries without a future within the current climate Paris Agreement target to prevent dangerous global warming. We shouldn't depend on them. There's uncertainty about any final approvals for Vickery, Shenhua and the Narrabri gas project, especially in the light of the recent Land and Environment Court ruling against the Rocky Hill mine near Gloucester. We've already seen the adverse impacts on the Shire as a result of the Cobra mine fiasco. According to the United States Department of Energy figures, these industries won't supply jobs. For the same amount of power, coal and natural gas employ one person, while renewables employ 79. I was recently in Bobbabri, where, due in part to an increase in nearby coal mining, the town is dying. The bowling club is closed. The once thriving golf club is struggling. There are miners in town, but their unsociable shifts contribute little to the town. The Og report, and I've got a copy of that here, which I'll make available, the Og report from the Australia Institute on the social and economic impacts of the Queensland gas fields shows little benefit for all and more likely a detriment to neighbouring communities. Inland rail is no solution either, since its business case is dependent on the transportation of coal for export. Resilience in communities is destroyed by dependence on big corporate employers. They come to town, drain the resources and leave the place diminished when they inevitably leave. A resilient community has numbers of small businesses working together and in competition. It builds strength. Our Shire should concentrate on what we already do well. We have enviable assets in our dark skies and world-class natural areas such as the Pilliga, the Warrumbungles and the Cooler Tops. Priceless assets such as these are disappearing worldwide with increasing population, exploitation and climate change. In the strategy, renewable energy is seen merely as a cost-saving measure. In fact, we have abundance of resource. Let's see it as an opportunity. We could have a community-owned solar farm near town with storage facility, standing alone from the grid, powering an industrial area without the grid connection expenses. It happens elsewhere. Our location at the intersection of highways lends itself to the development of solar-powered, fast-charging stations for the increasing numbers of electric cars which are currently reluctant to venture away from the cities. We need to facilitate the proposed Kola wind farm project, and I was pleased to hear that these things are probably going to happen soon. Great. Thanks, Greg. Other places are doing it. There's already an established solar farm near Ningen and another under construction at Nevertire. It's pie in the sky to expect, as is suggested in the strategy, that we'll benefit from the developments in and around our Shire, such as coal mining, gas extraction, inland rail and hard rock quarrying. We need to acknowledge that climate change is happening and happening fast. The intensity and unpredictability of the 2013 fire is one local example. The declining trend in rainfall and increasing trend in temperature and evaporation leading to our current water shortages is another. Extreme weather events are increasing locally and worldwide. A growing body of research is assessing how the disruption of weather systems, ecosystem loss, and potential damage from intensifying storms and droughts can create a cascade of tipping points in human society as well as the natural world. Since 1950, the number of floods has increased by a factor of 15, extreme temperature events by a factor of 20, wildfires sevenfold, topsoil now being lost 10 to 40 times faster than it's being replenished by natural processes. The 20 warmest years since records began in 1850 have been in the past 22 years. Vertebrate populations have fallen by an average of 60% since the 1970s, and insect numbers, vital for pollination, have declined even faster in some countries. That's really dangerous. It's inexcusable that our strategy barely considers this. It's a climate emergency. I'm speaking for a very large number of concerned citizens who want this council to succeed in this plan for our future. There's not a lot of support for doing nothing. Eurala Council is making a difference by reducing energy consumption and transitioning to zero emissions. Similarly, a council in Victoria, or I think it's Daylesford. Universities want to study transition. There's support out there. A call upon Warrumbungle Shire to respond to the mood of the citizens. A good starting point might be for Council to become committed and active members of the Climate Council's Cities Power Partnership, involving the regions as well as the cities. I call upon the Council to work towards transforming the economy of the Shire towards zero emissions, and to join with many councils around Australia to work together for a sustainable future. And while I'm at it, I'd like to encourage you to join us at Flicks in the Sticks on the evening of next Tuesday the 26th from 6:30 to watch a short film called Pilliga Rising, starring local people, including Maria Ricketts and Paris Norton. Any questions?
Questions? I've got one comment. I've been on inland rail since 2003, and that's the first time I've ever heard mention of Carlton Coal.
Well, I've seen in presentations that said that they were expecting that coal would be part of it. Maybe a different presentation from yours. I can give you a copy of the OG report, if anyone wants it, and as well as that, there's a copy of what I've actually said. So I'll leave them here.
I'll call for apologies. Anybody with any apologies?
Just to remind councillors that Councillor Clancy has leave of absence granted already by council.
Disclosure of interest. Any pecuniary interest or non-pecuniary interest?
Item 26, the VPA. Pecuniary.
Henry.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Item 7, got a non-pecuniary interest in item 7. As I'm on the board of Coowinda, it's a voluntary unpaid position, but it's a... conflict nonetheless.
Anybody else with any interest? We'll go on to the mayoral meeting minute in item number 1 next. Mover and a seconder.
Yeah, I'll move it.
Moving. Councillor Chetton, Councillor Hill, seconder.
Right, I've got a couple of questions. Things that have been. What is a near future event? What was that? That's on page 10. I think it's the 7th of December. Near future event.
An outbreak. Yes.
What was that?
Oh, I went to see the politicians about the roads.
Oh, right, OK. Mm. There was another couple. Australia Day. Two claims by you staying at the Acacia Motel. If you've got a car, why are you staying at the Acacia Motel?
Because I had to pick the ambassador up at 6 o'clock in the morning. And the second one, we got the, when the Premier was coming, I was left cooler about 10 or 11 o'clock at night.
Have a car.
Yeah, I drive it too.
Yep, and it's not changed. And now another couple on page 9, 5th of December, meeting with the Deputy Mayor, 161 kilometres from Baradine to Coona, and I assume back again.
61 it should have been.
Oh, right, so there's errors, okay. And the other one, a Croxton event. What's the Croxton event?
That's a birthday party.
Right.
I also come to a council, come to the, something else that day in Coona too.
Okay. I think that's all. Except when we go to your next mayoral minute, I'd like to refer back to some of the things in your statement there. Okay.
Everybody agreeable to have you, Councillor Hill?
Yeah. I can see that there is a query or two there, so that's fair enough that they look be looked at.
No queries. The motion. Those against? Carried. Item 2, Merrill Benaway Campground. Got a mover? Councillor Brady, Councillor Shinton.
The recommendation there is that Council note the incoming correspondence. That's all we're doing, is it? Yes. We're not going to accede to any of these.
If somebody wants to.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to speak on that correspondence. Haven't been heavily involved with the Benaway Primitive Camping Area since its onset in about 1995. I found Councillor Regan's letter contained a hell of a lot of mistruth. The main one was it was originally a Lions Club project. They kicked it off and started raising money for it. The progress were asked if they wanted anything to do with it, and they said they weren't in the business of making money. At the time, I was the own chairman of Lions. And then we got the stage where we did raise a bit of money. We had about $20,000 in the bank for the project, in conjunction with Rebecca Ryan and the then community coordinator, Julie Mitchell. We spoke to council about getting external grants and did receive some, which kicked the project on a little bit further. A lot later on in the piece, when we bought the block of land for where we're sitting now, we agreed to give all the townspeople, all the surrounding towns, a little bit of money to offset the cost of what Coonabarabran had spent to make it fair. That was to assist the Benaway camping ground, not to do it as a one-off thing. So that bit in the letter is a complete lie. I find the comments in about the plumbing, at which I was personally involved, to be defamatory. The plumbing was done by a licensed plumber, myself, who has a distinction in draining. They were done to the code. They were inspected by council and passed. The septic system that was put in there was to cope for 9 to 12 people, which was the plan for that camping area. It was never to be a caravan park as such. It was never to have powered sites as such to attract a volume of visitors the site clearly cannot cope with. It would never have been passed by council in the first place to put a facility of that type so close to the river, because it breaks every rule in the book. It was never, ever a Gary Andrews project, as stated by Councillor Regan. That's a straight-out lie. I find the whole lot of it defamatory, offensive, very derogatory to the current committee that are running it, and I think the people that formatted this letter and the names in it should apologise forthwith.
No comment on this?
That's all I can say. If anyone in the gallery can tell me that I'm telling lies, please stand up and do so.
No questions on this debate? That's Councillor Dillon.
Well, through you to Director Ryan, is this your area? That money that we voted out of the Drought Communities funding of $30,000, will that be a big help to the state of affairs?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, yes, it will help. I haven't had a chance to line up the quotes yet. We have three quotes to rectify the septic system down there and install a system that's going to work. Not saying there's anything wrong with what Councillor Lewis did, but absorption trenches do run out of life after a while, and that one's probably at the end of its tether. I haven't had a chance to review the quotes yet. That's my job for tomorrow. But the $30,000 will certainly go to help a long way. Yep.
There'll be facility in that for the caravans for a dump site. Will that be incorporated?
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
I think there's a bit of trouble with that, isn't there? That people try and facility is not intended for that to.
Yeah, in the past, it's the cassettes have been tipped down the toilet. That hasn't helped. Out of the camper vans and RVs and things like that, caravans.
Councillor Gable.
What is the official designation of that caravan park? Is it designated as primitive?
For you, Mr. Mayor, primitive campground.
And so how many does that allow to be there at one time, and for how long?
Well, now you're asking me. You're only supposed to have one primitive campground for every 2 hectares. That's off the top of my head. I'd have to go back to the legislation. I mean, I think about so many things every day, it's hard to recall, but, yeah.
So we should not be offering power in a...
Through you, Mr. Mayor, we went through this back in about 2014. There was a council report. What is approved down there at the moment has too many powered sites for the area that's available, so that's why we wanted to review the DA, and there's a resolution that says that the DA needs to be refreshed and looked at. Yeah.
It sounds to me as though we need a new agreement drawn up.
For you, Mr. Mayor, there's a council resolution that says we review the agreement.
I make a suggestion that be on the agenda for the community meeting at Binaway to kick off the discussions amongst the community who's willing to step up and have the agreement with them.
Would you like to move that, Councillor Cable?
Mr. Mayor, we already have a motion on the books. Whether Councillors Brady and Chinton would include that in their current motion.
Motion forward. Everybody agreeable? Now, item 3, minutes of the ordinary council meeting held on the 13th of December. The mover, Councillor Cable, Councillor Hill. Any comments? Put the motion. Carried. And it's an extraordinary meeting held on the 4th of January 2019. Okay. Cable, Councillor Brady. Any comments on this motion? Put the motion. Carried.
Mr. Mayor, if I could beg the indulgence of Council to bring items 10, 11, 12 and 13 forward at this point in time, just to allow a staff member to get away and travel.
Remove that item. Councillor Doolan, Councillor Hill, second. I'll put the motion. Carried.
So item number 10, which is the Cooler Sewerage Treatment Plant upgrade. It's on page 25 of the business paper.
Over. Councillor Cable. Councillor Shinton. Second. What Councillor Doolan?
Oh, I just had a couple of questions. The price for the land for the proposed site, I just did that again. Was it? Where is it?
I haven't been asked.
This is a comment, just seems a bit. And then I was a bit confused. You might be able to help me, General Manager or Ms. Weebles. Amount of state government funding was at 75%, or in that attachment we were given that was sort of were available to go to 100%, and I was just confused about which we were operating under.
Yes, that's what I'm, to be honest, I'm a bit confused about that too. So we had, as I stated in the report, that we had received an invitation to submit a detailed application. However, we contacted the funding body and said, well, we already submitted a full business case with the first lot of funding that we got through the regional water and wastewater backlog project. This is still required. Then we didn't really get a feedback on it, but however, the minister came and announced the funding, which was $3 million in total for Kola and Danidu. But the $3 million we applied for $3.99, which we got the letter saying that 100% was endorsed. So it's up to us or to me to follow up with the funding body to inquire. We haven't received anything in writing saying, yes, that's what you get. It was answered from the minister, and that's something that needs to be clarified.
A bit of a windfall if it was. The 100% would be tremendous.
Would be wonderful, but I'm thinking it's going to be 75%.
I was just, this that letter they sent, I just thought, it just had me.
Yeah. And in relation to the cost for site acquisition, that's purely an estimate only. No site has been identified as the preferred site at this point in time, is my understanding. It is the one that was marked there as just an example, I suppose. But,
Firstly, before they proceed costing anything, can they please make sure they can purchase land? Otherwise, it's a waste of time. Secondly, has anyone considered a levy bank around the existing one? I've spoken to Director Ty prior to the meeting, who said that would probably involve a flood study. My next question is, what remediation, if it is moved, is required at the current facility? I'm assuming we just can't walk away and leave it. And what are the costs associated for council with that? Another question is, if we are moving it, there's the cost to link the recycled water back to where it can be utilised, because it's going to be moved, if that's the end decision. And I actually think if you do move it up near the tip as indicated, it's not too far from the backup bore. It's just above the Queensbury Gully, and Cooler, like a lot of hilly towns, gets deluges that hit the top end of town, to the point some houses at the top end of the town have had deluges go through them. But by the time it gets to the bottom end of town, the stormwater drains are starting to dissipate it. So that's something else that has to be considered, protecting the high side if you're moving it up that far up the hill to divert water away from inundating it. And I also think further up the hill you go, the more smell likely to be pushed across the town. So I just would like those noted as you proceed.
Mr. Mayor, I have similar concerns. The other one is that why aren't we looking further east of the of where the plant is now? There's less of a climb for the pumps, so I would imagine that would be a far better proposition to see if we could purchase land to the east of the sewage treatment plant rather than pushing it all the way up that hill above Cooler. Just a suggestion.
The point of pushing it uphill was the flood prone area. I think that's why this suggests. And as the manager said earlier, it needs to be further investigated. High level assessment to pretty much satisfy the requirements from the EPA and DPI to just from the estimate of the cost to relocate the whole site is going to cost up to $2 million. So the thought was that just that would, you know, prevent further investigation, but seeing it was feasible, made the EPA and DPI say, well, now we want to investigate further, which came a bit as a... The current site is, like, the actual pumping station is not flood-prone. It's, like, on a big... You've probably seen that site. It's, like, on a big hill. So I assume a levee that needs to be established would need to be as high as this hill around the current maturation ponds to prevent them from being washed out if we do get a flood. So I'm not sure if that would be... I assume that would be need to be quite high.
Sure, it's cheaper than building a whole new one.
Any more debate on this item? Anybody like to move a motion?
There is a motion, Mr. Mayor.
I'll put the recommendations up. Everybody in favour? Part carried.
Item number 11, Coonabarra Brand Emergency Water Supply Project.
And a mover. Councillor Shenton, Councillor Hill.
And just in relation to the recommendation that is there, councillors, just to make it clear in point three, that is about easing water restrictions, of course, in Coonabarra Brand.
Are you doing anything on the valve up at Tymore Dam at the moment, or is that if we raise the wall? One at the bottom that you can't get the water out at the moment because it doesn't work?
Currently we're not doing anything on it. If we raise the wall and we get funding for it, that would be included, upgrading it. If we don't, we need to look at upgrading it nonetheless at some point in the future. But we have like a rough... there was a mechanical assessment done which told us, you know, how it could be improved, but we don't have any detailed cost on... you know, what that would mean, and nor do we have funding to do that at this stage.
So the minister said to us the other day that if you don't keep pushing him, this thing will just go away. What we should be doing is keep writing to him and telling him that we need this. We either need the dam raised. I suggested to him the other day that with this business of having releases to the environment, it's been probably 5 or 6 years since any water has flowed out of that dam. The environment, if it was there, is completely ruined now between the dam wall and the first tributary to the Castlereagh River. And he suggested that would be a very good argument to put if you didn't want to have environmental releases from the dam. And as you know yourself, an environmental release of that quality of water would kill the environment totally. So I'm just wondering if we can, at a more regular basis, start contacting the minister and telling him that while it's dry like this, it'd be a good time to start building something on the dam wall, or at least if we're looking at number three there that says eases water restrictions from 5 to 4 and our consumption has risen, are we positive that the bores that we have are going to keep up with this, given the fact that in your report here you say we don't have the measurement, we don't have number 6, that is on page 30, the fitting of level measurement instrumentation to the bores. So we don't know what they're doing at this stage, I assume.
Sorry, that probably wasn't completely accurate. There is some measurement, so the new bores got equipped with level instrumentation, which is monitored by the operators, but there's no data logger, so a data logger would help to, you know, monitor 24/7, and from memory, in one of our water committee meetings, the supervisor said that the hydrogeologist had a look at the data from when we started drawing up to now, and I think they said the water table had decreased by 600 millimeters. I think it was a drawing from it, which wasn't considered. But I don't have more than.
Okay, so do we have funding to install the data loggers and all that?
Yes.
Yep, okay.
How far are the bores coming back after they've been pumped? Can you tell us that one? They dropped?
I think they come back, like when the pump stops, I think it comes back to where it started.
It comes back up, yeah, but how far they drop down?
How far they drop down, how many metres, I can't tell you that. I would need to get how they drop down when they're on.
And another question would be the purchase of permanent licence. What are we aiming at there? And where's the money going to come from?
I would suggest, I think there was a recommendation that we apply for additional emergency funding. Like we have received this $2 million of emergency funding,
yep.
Including a core contribution of $300,000. And considering we're still in a drought situation and we have no water in the dam, we have used up the current allocation plus the additional purchase allocation, I understand it's likely that we receive emergency funding to purchase permanent license allocation.
It's actually part four of the recommendation.
So what sort of money are we talking about, though? Any idea?
In case we don't get it.
Yeah, sorry, it would be around, I think I wrote it further on, it would be around $1,000 per megalitre,
yeah,
so $250,000.
Okay. And that would be permanent? That would be permanent allocation once we bought that licence?
Yes, my understanding it works like real estate,
yep.
Like buying a house.
I totally believe towns shouldn't have to worry about buying licences. They should be able to use all the water they can get.
Just in addition to that, Mr Mayor, I had a conversation today with the, of all people, the cross-border commissioner. While he is designated as the cross-border commissioner, he actually has also been identified by Department of Premier and Cabinet to be a bit of a troubleshooter for the state government for the coming months in relation to such issues as water supplies for towns. And I expressed my concerns to him about the need for council to actually go out there and buy the water licences, that there should be another process available to us.
Any more comments, Councillor Dutton?
I'd just like to back up Councillor Shinton on the I think the urgency to push on with the dam wall. I think the at dry time and with the way things are lining up, I think that the funding for that would be almost a given if we could just get our submissions in line. I think we'd be able to secure some funding which would set our town up for, with that and the bores, a safe and secure water supply well into the future. And speaking to the Minister at Mandoran the other day, he seemed to think that there was a somebody along the way in Public Works who was a bit of a roadblock to this proposal. Whether that's the case or not, I'm not sure. But I would just urge everyone with the power to do something to move around that roadblock or whatever we need to do to... I think if we could get our proposal ready, we'd... just reading between the lines, I think we'd get a favourable outcome to any application we might make for funding. And that might not always be the case, and I think... the sooner we can strike in that, the better. I think you all deserve a lot of credit for the work you've done with the bores, because the town would have been in all sorts of trouble if that wasn't organised in a timely manner. And I think the state government deserves a bit of credit for $2 million they've given us, which we couldn't have afforded to pay for it. And I think the going forward with the... if we could secure funding for that dam and in conjunction with the bores, as I was saying before, I think that would, notwithstanding the terrible drought we're in now, I think we would we'd set the town up for a good water supply, which will give people a good standard of living with their gardens and gives people a lot of happiness. And I think if we can work towards that, we'll have done a good thing. So... whatever energy you can put towards it, I'd ask you to do so.
I appreciate where you're coming from there, councillors, but you do have to also appreciate that there's a lot going on in the water space at this point in time. With places like Mendoran being on level 6 water restrictions and concerns about the clarifier out at Barrowden and the likes as well. The staff are really pushing hard on those particular issues.
And I think the councillors were well aware of that, and majority of us attended that meeting at Mendoran there last week, and I did point out to Miss Weebles at the time how well she handled the situation down there and explained it calmly and professionally to the people there, and I think put their mind at ease. And I think that's in the spirit of what we're all trying to do here, is to look after our people. And I think anyone who attended that meeting would have known that the situation is pretty tough, but it's being handled just as well as it can be.
How would you like this motion put? There's 4 different items. Are you like them singly, or
they're all together?
I'll put them all together.
To the general manager, you mentioned that you suggested there should be an alternate mechanism for councils to access water licences with the minister.
Cross-border commissioner.
Can I suggest that be put down for a country mayor's meeting as something to discuss to get a bit of weight behind and maybe momentum for that to happen? Because I think that's a very good idea. We're talking about townships, not one person, so it should be a priority and should have a separate mechanism at state level.
Mr. Mayor, Councillors Shinton and Hill have got a motion before council at this point in time. Perhaps that one could be included with that motion.
Can you put that in English again for me? Tell me what you're putting down.
Number 5.
This will be number 5, but it does relate to what's written in number 4, and that is that through the Country Mayors Association, council seek an alternative process for the sourcing of licence allocation for town water supplies in emergencies.
I don't think the Country Mayors... I'm just a bit confused why Councillor Caper would have pick that particular group. Why?
Because then it can go from there to the LGAs and they all know what it's about. We've gone straight to the local government meetings in the past and no one had a clue what we were talking about because it didn't affect them. And I don't know how many coastal communities are facing the crunch with water like here is. To understand that we need a more rapid system to deal with local government.
The trouble is the Country Mayors Association doesn't have all the mayors out there that are suffering from this aren't members of the association.
Aren't they?
No. So, yeah, you've got your bigger ones. And
then we've got Mayor Todd's attending a water meeting at Bourke next week, is it?
That's Western Division.
Western Division, not a water committee.
Yeah. So maybe discuss it with them there.
We're not actually a member of the Western Division.
I know you're not a member, but it's listed that you've been invited publicly, so... we've got to get some traction. If we go as a lone voice, it's easy to dismiss, but if you go with several councils...
Yeah, but the person that we're talking to now is the person who has been charged with this in mind, and I would... If he's already made a phone call, we didn't phone him, I would imagine. He's phoned us, has he?
He made initial contact with us, but that came via Department Premier and Cabinet.
Yep.
Yeah. And then I followed up with him.
Yeah. I would imagine that we're on the list already. I don't. But look, I'll accept that that you go to Country Mayors, but I think that's a weak link.
To be a formal mechanism, not we've, just we've a already started it.
Yeah, that's been started because we're using the new commissioner, and I suppose he's now. I don't know how he can go through when everyone else's positions have been terminated. It seems a bit funny that he can carry on, does it not?
Yeah, I understand you're making reference, and I can't think of the name of the group, but
That group, yep.
Yeah, what was his name?
Colonel or something, or yeah. General or something, yeah. Yeah.
Niall Blair is supposed to be at that meeting, at that conference on the weekend. We might be able to talk to him there.
Yep, but, yeah, look, I'll accept that.
The motion, those in favour? Carried.
Item number 12, development of an integrated water cycle management strategy.
Got a mover. Doolan, second to Councillor Shinton.
Which one is it?
Item 12.
Any discussion on that item? The motion. Those in favour? Carried.
Item number 13, Mindoran water supply shortage.
Got a mover. Councillor Doolan, Councillor Lewis.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I'd like to ask the question, the new town well for the new water treatment works, what level is it set into the river and in relation to the old spears on the old pump? Is it deeper, same level or shallower?
I can't really answer that. I was there this week and I looked at the work as executed drawings from the new treatment plan, but I have no information on the old pumping station. But considering the river there behaves differently, so where we take it in currently, there isn't even water in the river. It's not flowing, there's just sand, so the flow is underneath, whereas where we took it before, like 10 years ago, there's actual flow in the river. So I'm not sure, you know, when you go from the sand level, where the intake is in relation to it, I can't tell you.
The reason I ask the question is, one, I moved a resolution several years ago that the old plant be maintained and kept there in case it's ever needed as a backup and also to be used as non-potable water. And in the past, when Mindoran got short of water, council, it was Coolashire Council at the time, would put a machine into the river and dig a trench into the aquifer, which is very shallow where that pump is, and put a new sand spear in, and they never had water restrictions. Admittedly, that was non-potable water, but if that old pipeline could be hooked up to the new water treatment works, and I'm speaking personally because I was the bloke that was digging the trenches, Mindoran would have no water shortage. There's plenty of water there. I proved it myself on my own farm only 3 weeks ago.
You're referring to the pump that's over near the bridge?
That's correct.
Yeah. We have made application for funding to extend the water from wherever it finishes to the water treatment plant.
So the resolution has already moved in term of council 8 years ago or more that plant be kept there to be used as non-potable water for the infrastructure to be maintained. If it hasn't been maintained, who voted that resolution down?
I can't help you with that one, sorry, Councillor, at this point.
Well, it was kept there for that purpose.
That water was put on the pump there. We kept that water pump to supply water to the park.
There's no shortage of water there. In the aquifer, is about that far underneath the river there. I'd take you down there and dig it with the shovel tomorrow and show you. The Castlereagh River runs upside down. That's no secret to anyone. The water's there, the aquifer is very shallow. You can read the Dunny Doo and Cooler newspapers and listen to what Greg Knott said about it just in the last month. It's there and I'm not the only one telling the story. There's no need for Mindoran to be on level 6 restrictions. It just needs a little bit of common sense brought on the factor.
As we said, we have made application for funding to extend that...
What I'm not arguing about is, this knowledge is there and it's been used in the past and it's on record. Peter Manning or any of the Alcoola people could tell you about this and what they used to do, and we're running around looking for scientists and advisors and consultants, and the answer's there and it's so simple.
We're reinventing the wheel instead of using the existing one.
I don't disagree with him, but option 3 is that's what it is. To put in the new pipeline, the 700 metres to the treatment plant, that's all there is to it. So, I can't see what we're arguing about, but in the old days they used to just put backhoes into the river and dig the bed up, and you try and do that now and see how you go. So it's a different kettle of fish now, so I think what we're doing is quite good.
Any more comments on this item?
Any of it estimated cost for the 700 metre pipeline?
In that funding application, we actually applied for more than that, so we buffered it a bit because there's always something unexpected happening. So we applied for it was actually totaling to a total of 650 metres from the current existing where it ends at the football ovals, the current irrigation pipe from that old pumping station, to where we can hook in an existing plant, in an existing pipe that's going to the plant from the current pumping station. So it's about 650 metres. Plus, we also applied for a replacement of the pump or a spare pump in that old pumping station and some water carting infrastructure installation at the plant itself, because we have already drafted a water carting plan to, you know, have a plan B, a worst case. And the total of the amount of funding we applied for was $220,000, and we applied for 100% funding.
Will we not start until we find out about the funding, or...? That would be correct. It shouldn't take long.
We're certainly hoping for a quick turnaround on this, and again, when we're in Bourke on Monday, the Minister's... either Monday or Tuesday, I'm not sure which day the Minister's coming, but we can certainly make representations to him about the urgency of this one.
Questions on that? With the motion, those in favour?
What are we actually voting on?
Three recommendations.
Which recommendation? One, two, or three?
All three.
Hearing. Right, wrong.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That brings us then back to item number five, which is the minutes of the Plan Advisory Committee.
Thank you.
Well done.
Item 5, we've got a mover for it. Councillor Staple, Councillor Lewis. Any comments on this item? Motion. Carried.
Item 6, minutes of the Warrumbungal Aerodromes Advisory Committee.
Mover. Councillor Dolan. Seconder, Councillor Cable. Comment on that item, Councillor Doolan.
Just through you, Mr. Mayor, to Director Ty. Where do we get up to? We had a motion in July to apply to Mr. Colton for a feasibility study to towing the Barradine airstrip. I can see that's in the resolution report in draft form, but it's pending a review of the scope of work. What, in your opinion, do we need to do to get that? What is it you want in the way of a resolution to we can get a costing on how much it will cost to tar the Barradine airstrip?
I think, through you, Mr. Mayor, the resolution was not so much the actual construction, but to get a funding to investigate and design. I think that's the scope of work. So that cost and the scope of work has not been finalised, and once it is, we can then write to the minister, to the local member.
Yes, because I think the first one was probably a bit deficient in just asking for a feasibility study, according to yourself. You wanted more with the... could we rely upon some of the work that one of our committee fellow committee members, Mr. Sturtridge,
on the aerodrome committee, would he'd have some costings that were relevant that we could use in this matter?
I'm sure he does have, and I can happy to talk with Mr. Sturtridge.
He went out and measured it all up, and the only thing he if the gravel was right there close, he was could done it very, very, very cheap. Yes, I've got another one. We're coming up. We're going to put a fence up at the aerodrome in Kernamaribyn, and we're not going to put a gate on. Apparently, the ramps are going to be left. Ramps going to be left open. About that, Kevin.
I think that was discussed at the aerodrome committee, and the committee was at a loss as to how to overcome that. You either have a gate or a ramp.
Have a gate or some sort of kangaroo on top of a ramp.
Far over it.
Councillor Cable, yeah, come in.
Just put a bar over the ramp. That's what a lot of people do to block entry over a ramp.
Comments?
Or a gate on one side of it. Yeah.
Through you, Mr. Mayor.
Just since you've raised that, when do we find out what's been successful with those drought applications? Because I read the 19th, the minister was going to say something, or that was the 2 weeks, or whatever it was. Is there any update on that?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Thanks for your question, Councillor Shinton. In advice that was provided to councillors that we received from the federal government, we are able to announce after 2 weeks, 2 weeks after notification, unless the minister advised otherwise. As councillors would be aware, there's quite a bit going on this week, and we're probably looking for a bit of fresh air to make an announcement regarding those projects. Obviously, councillors are aware what projects have been successful, and it is my understanding that a number of the groups are aware that projects have been successful, and council staff are working behind the scenes on those projects. So, yeah, we'll make an announcement shortly. Thank you.
No comments on that? I'll put the motion. Carried.
Item number 7, notice of motion.
Notice of motion to waive DA fees. Remover. Councillor Lewis. Councillor Nudsey. He should be. And the
other way. Excuse me, Mr. Mayor, this is the one that I had a non-pecuniary interest in, so I'll just take my leave while we discuss item 7.
Councillor Donovan leaves the meeting. Discussion on this item? Councillor Nudsey.
Yeah, didn't Councillor Lewis move it in the end? Or?
No, you didn't.
Okay, very good. I also, Mr. Mayor, seek a division on this vote, please.
What are you going to do?
Seek a division, a spill.
Yeah.
Just so we know who votes for what. Look, I think the motion's fairly self-explanatory. We have a situation that has already been described in the forum. We have an ageing population. We have a significant employer in the Shire in the form of Cowinda Coonabarabran. I believe it's only second to the Warrumbungle Shire in terms of the number it employs. It's an organisation that, despite its size, has significant financial risk associated with it. I think the Aged Care Royal Commission shall make it even more difficult for it to conduct its business in a viable manner once the commission is through. Accordingly, I think as a council we have a social obligation to be supporting organisations such as this. It's not a profit organisation. It's a significant employer. It helps the aged and the vulnerable within our community. I understand that some councillors have concerns that this may set a precedent. I don't share those concerns, and certainly the role of council is to consider proposals on their merits, and if we had something worthy of waiving of fees in the future, I think we should likewise support that. There have been concerns raised by some persons, both in council and outside of council, about the legalities of such a waiver. To put that in perspective, the fees expected of Cowinda for this development are in fact over $60,000, some of which are impossible to reverse. I'm not seeking to reverse those. I'm just seeking to reverse the components that we have discretion over, and that's about $40,000. Miss Ryan has described how that's broken down in a previous email to councillors. I'm pretty sure we all have that, so there's no need to reread that email. So I think it's a fair compromise. We're not trying to do something that's illegal. I think we're making a very strong statement to the community about our intentions and where our priorities lie, and I hope that the council can support this motion.
Lewis?
Mayor, all I'd like to add to that is, as Mrs. Deep stated, this project is not increasing the load on any of council's services, in as much as it's going to be the same amount of people, same amount of water, the same amount of drains, etc., etc. That's why I support this motion. It's not a new development, it's more or less a reno. It should have, like she said, having three people in the one room, they've got a room for everyone, but it's still the same amount of people at the end of the day. Thank you.
More discussion on this item?
Look, I have a bit of a problem with it. I believe it does set a precedent. We had all of the major developments that have come through recently who have asked for some sort of relief. We haven't acceded to that. I was led to believe that if you make a decision like this, you could easily be answerable to the Office of Local Government. I'm not sure that if I'm correct with that, but I was told that you have set this, you've put it on public display for 28 days, you've asked for comments. We had the, we didn't have comments, so people are happy with what we're doing with major development. And if I could ask, is that right, that if you make a decision like this that you can be investigated by the Office of Local Government if you have a plan in place and you change your plan? Can anyone answer that?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, that's a difficult question, but I would think it's a bit like an LEP. If you put your LEP out an exhibition and you do something against it, I mean, that's probably not quite right. That's all I can really offer in that one.
Yeah. If I could suggest to councillors that it is within the discretion of council, in my view, to be able to waive a fee such as this. The issue that council has to take into account is the impact it does have financially on this organisation, not just the Cowinda organisation, but also on this organisation. And I did speak last year about the financial position this council is in, and I will do the same again this year.
Yeah. Abel?
Are people prepared to do a 50-50 compromise?
Mayor, is that an amendment or?
No, I'm just asking the question before we.
The question. I'm just waiting for an answer.
Yeah. So there's obviously yes, no, and no in between.
I propose the vote be put, and then if it goes a particular way, someone else can, with your permission, of course, Mr. Mayor, if you're willing to accept an urgency motion or an urgency amendment, then you know, so be it.
Just from a procedural point of view, if you put a motion to be put, then council will vote on whether you just continue on with the debate or not. If the council decides to cease the debate, then the motion shall be that council considers is that council waives the section 712 fees for DA22/218. So there'll be no further debate on that item.
Yeah, I understand that, but it will that decision will fall one way or the other way. But then if a councillor or the mayor put forward another motion that's similar, I can't see that that's a problem as long as the mayor permits it.
I'll have to disagree with you there, sorry, councillor. Council will be voting on council waiving the section 712 fees.
I understand that. So say in theory we vote this motion down, and then in 5 minutes another councillor asks for an urgency motion and puts a motion, for example, that a waiver be a discount rather than a waiver, it be discounted by $20,000 or whatever the case may be. That would be another motion that I would see as a valid motion as long as the mayor's happy to debate it.
I think the cleaner way would be if someone has an alternative view as an amendment, they put that forward, you vote on that, and whichever way it falls, then that's pretty much decided.
I'll move that we split it down the middle, 50% reimbursement as opposed to full.
But we got a seconder for that motion?
Yeah, I'll
Ray,
second
that.
That's way 50% of the fees, 712 fees.
Of our fees, not including state fees.
712 fees.
Okay, yep.
Councillor Hill,
you ready? I'll leave the room because I'll abstain from that amended motion. Thank you.
Motion, those in favour?
Mr. Mayor, if the motion's been moved and seconded, I think we should vote on that motion. That's
it's an amendment. He's putting the amendment.
It's an amendment.
We've just voted.
You've got to vote in your first motion. The initial motion first before you can move an amendment.
No. You vote on the amendment. If the amendment becomes the motion, then the original motion is wiped.
Oh, sorry, I'm with Milo on this one. I'm out of here.
The vote's been taken.
What's
the matter?
It's finished, isn't it? Finished with?
Mr. Mayor, is there any debate in relation to the amendment?
Any debate in relation to the amendment?
I totally agree what Mrs. D, like, you know, Coinda is an amazing asset to have in our community and that, and I don't disregard that at all, but I just do, my concerns are, you know, with Dunny Do down there, did we waive the DA down there, you know, and other things in the community that are just as good. And then the repercussions of future things, like we'll be having every second person knock on our door wanting DA fees waived.
Especially the not-for-profits, which we've knocked back several in recent years. This is, to me, a compromise, supporting them. Because I totally agree, it's a wonderful facility, it should be supported. But we also have costs to cover ourselves, so this is a compromise.
And we have got a town full of not-for-profit services. We are, you know...
I'm just reading things on the walkie. Waiver 20,000 for the DA. Yeah?
I asked the question, Leanne, how much does that reduce the DA way?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, the section 712 fees are 45,000, so if you're compromising and going halfway, it's half of that, half of 45.
So 22,500.
I'd be happy for a $22,000 discount.
22,500. Amendment up, we come to them in. Put the amendment up, in favour, who's in favour? Carried.
Mr. Mayor, the amendment now becomes the motion.
I'll put the amendment up as a motion. And everybody in favour? Sure, carried. I'm ready. What do you think of that, too?
Mr. Mayor, that brings us to item number 8, councillors' monthly travel claims.
We've got to go back. We wanted to spill on that, didn't we?
If council wants a spill, then two councillors, according to council's code of meeting practice, need to call it.
I voted for a spill. I moved a spill.
According to council's code of meeting practice, there needs to be two councillors.
Right?
I give hearing aid in.
I hear, I'm sorry.
Where's the hearing aid?
So I turned him off. I was so disgusted with this.
Vote for a spill. Vote what?
Yeah, I'll second it. He's not going to understand.
Councillor Doolan, could I suggest you might leave the room again?
Oh,
right. So you left the room for the last one, unless, of course, you changed your mind about that.
I'll put the motion up. Those in favour?
I don't think you... Do you need a majority for a spill? Don't you just need two asking for it?
Two to ask for it, and then the Mayor says those who voted in favour and those voting against.
Those in voting in favour? Those against? Lewiston?
No, I voted for the spill. No, I abstained. I was out of the room. I didn't vote.
Sorry, just to be clear on this, two councillors have called for a division. So the Mayor is now calling for those who voted on the actual motion, not for a spill. So it's on the motion itself.
Yeah, but you would know that because you've already voted on the motion.
You asked for a spill before we went, we didn't.
That's right, but didn't you take note on who voted for what?
We did, yes, but we never put it down.
After the spill, there wasn't a seconder.
I've seconded it.
There is now, but not when he asked at the beginning of
But the Mayor didn't put it. He was meant to put it.
He has the non-pecuniary interest. He's not part of this discussion.
I'm just reading what's here, so I don't quite know what the next move is or why it's necessary.
So, Mayor, just to be clear, I think it would be... what I'm seeking is that whatever the vote happened to be when I was out of the room and Ray was out of the room and Ambrose was out of the room. I'm not sure who else. Maybe it looks like you may not have even had a quorum, in fact.
Five.
You had five. Okay. In that case, yes, just of those five, who voted for what? That's all I'm seeking to know.
Everybody.
It was unanimous. Easy. You just write it was unanimous.
Okay.
That brings us to item number 8. Mr. Mayor, councillors' monthly travel claims.
Get a mover. Oh, yes. Councillor Hill. Second up. Councillor Shinton. I'll put the motion. Those agreeable? Carried.
Item number 9, councillors' monthly travel claims for January.
A mover. You got a mover?
I was wondering where you'd been.
Yeah, I'll have to look it up.
Councillor Shinton. Councillor Cable. Those in favour? Have a show of hands, please. Yeah, Kerry.
Item number 14, the April 2019 council meeting date.
Mover. Councillor Cable. Councillor Hill. Any comment on that?
No, but that was quite reasonable, really.
Motion, everybody agreeable? Carried.
Item number 15, council resolutions report.
Councillor Cable, Councillor Brady. Any comment on this? Councillor Doolan.
Yes, just one, Mr. Mayor, if I could. I was just looking through the resolutions report for some other things, and the one about our assisting local businesses to do business with council. It might have dropped off because it might be a bit old, but we had a forum here in the chamber here, and we were going to have one in Cooler or Dunedoo. But I think with Mr. Jones leaving the our employee, it might have fallen by the wayside. So I was just wondering if I could ask our current acting director what our progress was in helping local businesses to sell to us and what might happen going forward.
Yeah, through you, Mr. Mayor, thanks for your question, Councillor Doolan. We are in the planning stages. We've received a formal request from the Cooler District Development Group to hold a session down in Cooler. So, yeah, we're planning to hold a session down there.
The time frame, you're just a little... The next little while?
Yeah, definitely before the end of financial year.
And plans for a recap up this end of the shire, maybe? Possibly?
If councillors think that would be something that the community would be interested in, we can definitely have a chat to perhaps the Chamber of Commerce about that.
I just think... I think that'd be a good idea, just my personal opinion. I just think that... at this time, we've been talking about the water supply, and that all hinges off the back of this drought, and I just think any morale boost we could give to our local businesses would go a long way. So I think all power to you. If you can put a bit of spring in people's step, that would be good.
Richard, is that right? Put the motion. I'm going to move her. I thought we had.
I think it was.
Take it out. Councillor Hill.
Councillor Brady. April Brady.
Exactly, it was done, yeah. That's right.
Item number 16, the rebates report.
Got a mover. Councillor Shinton. Councillor Cable. Discussion on this item. Motion. Carried.
Item 17, operational plan.
Got a mover. Oh, yeah. Councillor Hill. Seconder. Councillor Brady.
Those, those dates, we set them in our calendars now. They're
yeah, through you, Mr. Magus, please. We'd advised them previously through the weekly wrap-up, so this is just a formalisation of those dates.
And on this item?
Just asked if we could have the invite sent to our calendars.
The motion, those in favour?
Item 18, appointment of auditor.
Councillor Shinton, Councillor Hill. And on that item. Motion carried.
Item 19, delivery program.
Mover. Seconder, Councillor Chitten, Councillor Hill. And on this item.
Yeah, my comment would be that we have been overloaded in February and January we didn't have a meeting. Crikey. This has been one of the biggest business papers, I think, that we've had to deal with, and I've always been against not having a January meeting, but it showed it up this time, especially with the iPads, you know, doing what they were doing, going to America and all that sort of stuff, and and having lost nearly a whole weekend, like a breeding, and that put the pressure on for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and today to get through it, because the attachments, that was a fairly big list of things to read through there. Anyway, just a comment.
No, I totally agree with that too, Kevin.
Oh, right. Okay.
Anybody like to move that we go back to January meeting?
Not at this stage, but it's just something that we should always consider.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to remind the other councillors sitting in this room that when a motion was moved by me only a few months ago to try and make that gap a bit more manageable, I was comprehensively voted down. So I have no sympathy at all for the previous comments.
I've never been in favour of not having a January meeting. I'll put that motion.
I'll remind you, Mr. Mayor, you're one of the ones who voted against it.
I might have been there. Put the motion.
Eric. Item 20, quarterly budget review.
And a mover. Councillor Hill. A seconder. Councillor Dolan. Comment on this item? Yeah,
under the family daycare section, there appears to be a $15,000 surplus, and then it's neutralised as an RA movement. Could I seek an explanation of that, please?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Thanks for your question, Councillor Annuzzi. So that would be a movement into restricted assets. So if at the end of the financial year there are any surpluses for externally funded programs, they moved into restricted assets so that they don't go in the general fund, so they're held against that particular service.
If I'm not mistaken, the previous quarter there was a even bigger amount than 15,000 moved in a similar way, and yet we're being told the family daycare is losing money.
Again, through you, Mr. Mayor. I think I previously advised that family daycare received some project funding this year, so on top of what is their normal operational funding, so that's what's reflected in that.
Can I just ask a question? Do these PowerPoints work or are they just for show? Because I've gone flat and I'm plugged in.
Have you turned it on?
I know. Where's the switch? There is no switch. It's just a whole lot of PowerPoints.
I think she was being funny when she said that.
Oh, yeah.
Mine works.
Mine doesn't.
If you charge it.
Is there another plug somewhere?
I've just changed plugs and it's the whole lot seems to be out of here.
Is it charging now?
It's no.
Loose. It's loose. Hey. Go. What?
Don't worry.
Electrician much, Nick?
Oh, we've got the electrician, have we?
That's what
everyone
knows.
You want to put that motion?
Who is he talking about?
I'll put that motion. Everybody in favour?
Item 21, investments and term deposits for December.
You got a mover. Councillor Cable. Councillor Hill. Any queries on that item? Ready? I'll put the motion. Harry.
Item 22, investments and term deposits for January.
The mover.
Yep.
Councillor Cable, Councillor Hill. Who's on their item?
He's got you organised now. He won't be going to complain.
No queries on that?
Oh, stopped. I'm stuck somewhere.
Motion, those in favour? Carry.
Item 23, guideline for school bus routes.
Over. Councillor Brady and Councillor Hill.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to comment on that. My family operated the bus run in this shire for 60 years and we weren't asked anything about this. It says their local people were asked and that wasn't the case.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, there were. I've seen evidence that the report, the guidelines, were sent to a number of bus operators as well as the schools.
A little bit more to the Shire than Kinabarabran, I think.
I suppose the salient question is there something wrong with it? Do you find it offensive? Is there something wrong with the guideline? Or
I haven't seen the guidelines, haven't been consulted. And
yeah,
as a party, as a bus operator, we haven't received any correspondence or suggestions or what we can and can't do. I don't know how many other bus operators in the Shire are in the same boat. But I think my kids' lives are just as important as the ones from Coonabarabran.
Any more comments on that, Adam?
Got a mover in a second or what? Yep, good.
Councillors Brady and Hill.
Right.
I'd like to move information on that, councillors.
I know what my wife will say as soon as she says it. She'll say, well, why wasn't I asked? I've been driving the bus for the last 20 years. No one asked me.
Amendment up.
I'll send her up here. You can tell her the answer because she'll be up me.
Would you like to have an amendment to it? Up to you. Any more discussion?
It says in the background there that it was presented to council, placed on public exhibition, sent to all schools within the Shire, several bus operators, was advertised through the town newspapers, council website and social media. I think we did a reasonable job of... we missed one.
Frequency of stops and...
I don't think there are any great changes from the one that was presented to council in November, but I thought we covered all avenues. Not that I'm responsible for it, but I thought it was a reasonably good attempt at giving us a policy at least.
I'll put the motion up. Those in favour? Harry.
I'd like my vote recorded against that, please. I'd like my vote recorded against that so that I can say to my wife I didn't do it.
Councillor Lewis wishes to record his vote.
The meeting's recorded anyway, so she can go and listen.
Item 24, road renaming.
Mover. Councillor Shenton, Councillor.
This is crazy.
Anybody have any discussion on this?
Well, I just wondered whether we've got the recommendation. I know we had two people, I think if I recall rightly, who from that locality voted or expressed their desire not to have the road changed, but we've got that the council changed the name subject to consultation with the relevant property owners. Do we do it the other way around, or do we do the consultation and then change, or do we change and then consult?
Through Mr. Mayor, I think the intention here is to write to those properties in Warrumbungle Shire that have their addresses of Wool Road, and if suggesting to them that the road be called Bulula Road, and if there's any objections, then it'll come back to council.
I see what you... Well, it's an admirable aim to get uniformity with the navigational devices. But it shouldn't be beyond the wit and wisdom of those things to change as you drive along. John Street turns back into the Newell Highway, turns into the Oxley Highway. It should be able to cope with those intricacies, although it doesn't seem to be able to do it at our place. I live on Maryula Road, which Google Maps calls Coonabarabran Street for some reason. But as long as you're doing it in that order, that would be appropriate. I thought we were changing and then consulting, which I thought did away with the need for consulting.
I think the recommendation is subject to consultation, and my interpretation there is that if there's any objection, it comes back to council.
Councillor Hill.
I know I was just agreeing that the recommendation.
I'll put the motion, those in favour. Gary.
Item number 25, emergency management exercise.
We're going to move her.
Yep.
Councillor Cable, Councillor Brady. Any discussion on this item?
I just ask a question. How does the desktop emergency exercise help in the real world? Anything desktop concerns me because it never seems to be any reality outcome.
Mr. Mayor, just by way of comment perhaps, but... my observation of a desktop exercise depends on the number and the range of participants. So if there's a broad range of people who have an interest in businesses in Warrumbungle Shire and those agencies who have responsibility to respond to a disaster, if they're all in the room and there are scenarios painted and they're put on the spot and asked questions, about you know, their communications and what were they, and their level of resources. I think desktop exercise is a good way to go. It's an all-day exercise. From my understanding, it's a demanding on the participants.
Ms. Mayor?
Hey, Councillor Dolan.
Yes, through you, Mr. Mayor, to Councillor Cable. I remember there was such an exercise held in the old Coonabarabran Shire over 30 years ago, as I recall. And I was just talking to some people who participated in it, and they said it was very worthwhile because you were saying scenarios are painted and some people were put under pressure with, well, what would you do now? And they didn't know what to do now. And they've only counted their lucky stars that it was only a desktop, not the real thing. I remember the one example they did point out, they'd a semi-trailer load of gas going past the town clock collided with the clock and it blevied. And they were all saying, well, what do we do? And it was about communications. And they said, well, there are no more communications in Coonabarabran because they're from the post office, and that went up. What do we do now? Oh, I hadn't thought of that. So without things going bang, there are some benefits to doing it.
Well documented, because after two fires here, it seems often the basics are missed at the next thing.
And perhaps, Mr. Mayor, that's one of the reasons why keeping that awareness and amongst not just the agencies involved, but businesses, you know, continuity plans and. And so it's a continual education, I think.
Of this item.
I just thought to ask, was it 30 years ago? Because I remembered being dragged into
that. Oh, the wall, I guess.
Yeah, okay.
I'll put this motion up, all in favour. Harry.
Item 26, Liverpool Range Wind Farm VPA.
Got a mover. Councillor Hill, Councillor Lewis. Question on this item. Councillor Nitzing.
For a start, as I warned you about earlier, Mr. Mayor, Councillor Capel made comments during the forum about this matter when she clearly has a vested interest. Now, I know that wasn't the formal debate, but when a councillor has not only a vested interest, a pecuniary vested interest, and speaks in favour of something, that can be seen to be trying to persuade the other councillors. I think we have exposed ourselves very greatly to criticism as a council on this matter. Now, in contrast, we had Councillor Doolan sit through the Cowinda part of the forum and say nothing. I think that that's a safer approach and a more sensible approach. Even a safer still approach would have been to declare the interest before the forum and exit during those particular discussions. I think we've made ourselves very vulnerable to criticism. I don't think we've exercised best practice there. And I'm disappointed that even when I pointed that out, it was allowed to continue. Now, to the topic at hand. We had a presentation and extensive documentation presented to us. I refer to Mr. Piper's presentation, which was an excellent presentation, and I also agree that the legal submission presented by the Associate Professor at ANU was also an excellent submission. And I think Council, I agree, has done a great job in making modifications for the better to the agreement. However, in Mr. Piper's presentation, several points remain unanswered in my mind. I asked about the issues of energy security, energy storage and decommissioning, and it seems that they're all being left to faith in government processes, faith in for future councils, faith in the goodwill of others who remain unnamed. I caution council in just applying such faith to such projects, because we've already been stung very badly when it comes to Dunedoo. This is a project that's going to be even bigger even more significant than Dunedoo. And if we get this wrong, we're really going to be going out the door backwards in terms of a council, in terms of reputation, finances, etc. We cannot afford to be getting this wrong. Now, I realise, much like Dunedoo, we've inherited this beast from the previous council, and we have to make the best of what is a difficult situation. Just like with Dunedoo, I'm not saying that I don't want this project, but I'm saying that we haven't done our homework, we haven't looked after the interests of our shire and our community well enough as yet. So in the proposal, it says that this will generate enough energy for 460,000 houses. However, there is no guarantee that of those 460,000 houses, the 5,000-odd houses in our shire will be part of that. It's no secret to any of us how much trouble we have with blackouts in our shire, both for residents and business owners. It is a cause of major disruption, and it is a major disincentive to doing business in this shire. Storage hasn't been at all addressed in this proposal, or certainly not to my satisfaction. In contrast, we heard a proposal by Jane Judd, also in the forum, talking about more sensible measures that included energy storage that could be self-sufficient and would give us independence from the grid. In my mind, that's a much better approach to be taking. And I don't see how, with all the sophisticated negotiation and funding of this project, we haven't managed to get security and storage sorted out. Decommissioning. Well, this is going to be an issue much sooner than what we all realise. This technology is moving so fast that I don't think anyone around this table, anyone in this room, really has a grasp as to how fast these things are moving. These things are going to be obsolete probably by the time the project is completed, Mr. Mayor. And there are so many other energy technologies coming online that really do we need such big, noisy, ugly things spoiling one of the most picturesque landscapes in our shire, if not in the state. It's also a question of equity, which ties in with the security issue as well. We're spending all these millions for the benefit of all these other people in the state, and the residents of our shire who are not very well healed are not really getting much out of this. To be squabbling over a few thousand dollars in, you know, community funds and what's going to be a road repair and what's going to be for the community of Cooler, I think we're really missing the big picture here. If this proposal was to include things like substations for our shire to guarantee that we had safer energy, if this proposal was to include things like storage, then yes, it'd be a great thing for our shire. But at the moment, we're not getting enough out of this project, and for that reason, I'm going to object to it.
I'll comment on this.
This is a state significant development, and we have very little input into it. This is the approval, and the conditions are set by the state government. When you get to places like Upper Lachlan, which we visited a few months back, and I think it's got the biggest concentration of individual wind farms anywhere in the state, and those, the original ones, which were built, I think they said, over 22 years ago, and they're still operating, those particular ones had no VPAs at all, and I think that's the reason we went down there, to talk to landholders and find out what their problems were. And of course the problems were that they were ridden roughshod over by the state government and the developers. This again is a developer. All he wants to do is build wind turbines and sell them. And I was told probably 6 months ago at a meeting in Upper Huntershire, I think it was, that by the fellow who runs this Epuron, we're pretty close to signing an agreement now for this to be built. I don't think he's telling the truth. I don't think that we're anywhere near this proposal. This is billions of dollars of investment going here, and they want someone to purchase it from them, and that's going to be the biggest thing. This has not got off the ground yet. as far as we can see. So unless you know something.
Can I just add something? I had a call from Epiron probably about 3 weeks ago, and they were waiting to hear from their board whether a proposed purchase, or whether the offer was going to be accepted or not. So it's very close to having a buyer for the development. Yep.
Good. Yeah. And of course, the other problem we've got is that I thought this was a reasonably good VPA, except for the fact that it's not the production from each of the towers. It's the number of towers times an amount of money should be done on what they produce and pump into the thing, because these into the grid, because these fellas can come in now and build a. With the bigger heads that they've got now. I mean, we had a look at the 22-year-old ones compared to the new farm just over the road from that one, and they'd be three times the size, and they appear to be spinning slower, but they're producing three, four, five times more energy than the old ones. They could easily take the 267 turbines, produce the same energy from 120 of them, let's say. And so this will be nowhere as big as we think, and neither will the dollars from the VPA. That's the only problem I've had with it.
I understand and accept that this is in many ways fait accompli. The previous councils set the wheels in motion. The state government wants it. The federal government probably wants it as well. But I think we owe it to our communities to at least make a very clear signal to the higher levels of government and to the communities themselves that we feel that we could be getting a better deal here. Even if it is nothing more than symbolic, Mr. Mayor, I think we have an obligation to our communities.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to question the $140,000 a year we're going to get for road maintenance, and what's going to happen the other 48 weeks of the year? Because we'd spend $140,000 in a fortnight. It's on page 77 of the business paper.
When they put the mine into Yulin, they give them $5 million.
And $140,000 too less.
It cost them a lot more.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. So that funding they mentioned for the roadworks, that's separate to the conditions of consent. We're talking about two different things here, I know, but conditions of consent for this development ensure as far as possible that the road is looked after during the development, so that which that means that if during the construction of the wind turbines and the farm, and that if the roads are damaged, that the developer fixes them.
I accept that, but the roads are going to be built not at our cost, but it'll be up to us to maintain them. We can't explain to our current rural road users why we can't maintain the road network, and to come along and say we don't maintain that network for $140,000 a year, it's going to be a very hard one to sell.
It is a big area of road. I don't think it is, but is it? Does anybody know?
It's true, Mr. Mayor. There is a length of road that's involved. So, I mean, the conditions of consent limit truck and vehicle movements to particular roads within the Shire, and I'm not sure now the length, total length. It's not a great length, but to re-emphasise that through the conditions of consent, a lot of effort was put into ensuring that that throughout the life of the project, that any damage to the road because of the project would be rectified by the developer.
I don't know. No more comments, I'll have to put the motion. Favour. Up in favour. 1, 2, 3. Carried.
So, Mayor, could I have my vote against it recorded, please?
Vote recorded against it.
Item 27, development applications, December 2018.
We need to call in Councillor Capel again.
I'm sorry.
And, Mr. Mayor, I do note that you didn't address my issue about the declaring of a conflict.
On this one, move it. Item 27, Councillor Brady, Councillor Hill. Of this item. Motion, those in favour?
Yeah.
More hands, please. Carried.
Item 28, development applications, January 2019.
Mover, Councillor Hill, Councillor Brady.
And now we're
stopped. On this item. Motion. Motion in favour, carried.
Mr. Mayor, that brings us to item. Those items in 29, which are reports to be considered in closed council, item 29.1 is the forensic audit recommendation there that's going to closed council under 10A2A of the Local Government Act.
Can I move it? Aaron.
Who's moving
it? Councillor Hill, Councillor Bray. I'll put the motion. Carried.
Item 29.2, organisational development monthly report. Recommendation that goes to closed council under 10A2A of the Local Government Act.
Okay. Now we've got a mover. I'm calling for a mover, Councillor Doolan and Councillor Hill. Those in favour? Carried.
Item 29.3, Management Services, Maintenance IT, recommendation that goes into closed council under 10A, and that should be 2B. Well, actually, that's not correct. Sorry. 10A 2D, sorry, of the Local Government Act.
Councillor Dillon, Councillor Chilton.
Item 29.4, request for write-off of rates, be referred to closed council under 10A2B of the Local Government Act.
Councillor Doolan, Councillor Lewis, those in favour? Carried.
Item 29.5, request for write-off of rates, be referred to closed council under 10A2B of the Local Government Act.
Councillor Cable, Councillor Brady, motion, carried.
Item 29.6, tenders for hire of various plan items as on a casual basis and be referred to closed council under 10A2C and D of the Local Government Act.
Cable, Councillor Brady. Motion, all in favour? Carried.
on 29.7, Three Rivers Regional Retirement Community Information Report, February, to be referred to closed council under 10A2G of the Local Government Act.
Move it. Councillor Cable, Councillor Doolan, put the motion. Carried.
29.8, modified proposal for Three Rivers Regional Retirement Community, and be referred to closed council on the 10A2C, D and G of the Local Government Act.
Councillor Cable. Councillor in favour? Carried.
Mr. Mayor, the opportunity now exists for those members of the public to come forward and express their reasons why those items or any of those items should not go into closed council and be considered an open council. Mr. Mayor, there are no representations, so there are further recommendations there to resolve to go into closed council, etc.
Councillor Hill, Councillor Dillon.
Okay, can I just go and find something to nibble? Is this going to need a week because I'm
going to have a break, am I?
I think keep going.
Anybody want to keep going or grab a break?
I think we just eat on the run, hey, so we can get home.
I'll take up recording.
We'll adjourn in 5 minutes till I come back.
All right, councillors, can you just open the door, please? Just returning to open council, and any members of the public outside are welcome to rejoin the council. During the closed council session, council made resolutions in relation to a number of items. 29.1 was a forensic audit on a motion of PA Councillor Caperstone and by Councillor Doolan that council updated for the forensic audit. There was a supplementary motion there moved by Councillor Nooksy, seconded by Councillor Doolan. The redacted forensic audit report be redacted in such a way as to be made public. In relation to item 29.2, or National Development Monthly Report, as Cable and Hill, that the Organisational Development Monthly Report for February 2019 be noted for information. In relation to item 29.3, Managed Services Support and Maintenance IT End User Support Report. The resolution of Council was that Council authorised, or one authorised General Manager to negotiate and enter into an extension of the Managed Services Support and Maintenance IT End User Support Agreement with item 29.4 on the motion that council denied the request. Item 29.5, request for write-off of legal charges and interest on the motion of councillors Doolan and Brady. Council denied the request and entered into a payment plan with the item 29.6, tenders for the hire of various plan items on a casual basis, 2009. Motion of Councillors Capel and Lewis is one, that tender rates of casual plan hire for the period 1 March 2019 to 2 February 2020 under the hourly rate schedule to be accepted. I shan't read out the items, but there are a list of items there.
Point two, council advised contractors that the following rates for supply of trash under the hourly rate and distance schedule be accepted for the period 1 March 2019 to 28 February 2020. There is a list of rates. Point three, council advised contractors that the following rates for supply of trucks under the hourly rate and distance schedule will be accepted for the period. Sorry, I've just noticed I've. Council advised contractors that the following rates for the supply of trucks under the float hourly rate and distance schedule will be accepted for the period 1 March 2019 to 28 February 2020. Again, there's a schedule of rates. And point four, council advised contractors that the following rates for the supply of trucks under the quantity and distance schedule for the period 1 March 2019 to 28 February 2020 will be accepted. There is a schedule of rates therein. Item 29.7, which is the Three Rivers Regional Retirement Community Report, update report, on a motion of Councillors Doolan and Annuzzi, that Council endorse the actions taken in relation to the Three Rivers Regional Retirement Community Project information. Two, under section 55 in brackets 3 in brackets Roman numeral 1 of the Local Government Act 1993, New South Wales, Council does not proceed to tendering the contract for legal representation for the Three Rivers Regional Retirement Community due to extenuating circumstances relating to the impracticality of tendering for these services at this stage of the proceedings, and the appointed representative is Vincent Young. And 29.8, that a modified proposal for the Three Rivers Regional Retirement Community report. On a motion of Councillor Doolan, seconded by Councillor Hill, that Council defer the decision on a modified proposal until the March Council meeting, or March 2019 Council meeting. Thank you. Mr Mayor, there is a late report for councillors in relation to the pool trial hours at Mindoran, Binaway and Barradine. This is to update councillors on the work undertaken so far to move to the trial period. Basically, what the report is talking about is that to ensure that the water safety standards are complied with, urban services staff have been trained to perform water testing and making arrangements for the provision of extra keys and the likes for the trial period for those pools. And the council staff had a meeting with representatives from Statewide Mutual, which is council's insurance mutual, to conduct an assessment of the Barradine pool on the 29th of January 2019. And as now that come to that meeting, there were a number of recommendations made regarding lifeguards and other recommendations. Unfortunately, the introduction of the trial timetable has been beset by a reduction in available lifeguards. The most recent has been the resignation of a lifeguard at Barradine. The trial in relation to the unsupervised hours is going ahead as best as we can at this point in time, with unsupervised hours between 6 a.m. and 3 p.m. Still occurring. However, due to lifeguard availability, we're having difficulties in manning the 3 p.m. until 7 p.m. Period for the remainder of February, and then in March, 3 p.m. until 6 p.m. Period. Any questions in relation to this particular item, councillors?
Yeah,
question. The pools are not closed out to user groups, swimming clubs and schools. Why not? Have they got, they've got their own safety officer, have they, or what's the go there?
Schools tend to my knowledge, the schools tend to have lifeguards on the staff. And the swimming club, I know my swimming club has people that are certified lifeguards.
I heard Barradine School walked away from it and said no way they wouldn't go there without a lifeguard.
Basically, all go there and they've got their own lifeguards.
Aberdeen doesn't, so, yeah.
Aberdeen wasn't interested, that was the trouble. Okay. I bet they got somebody at school who can do it.
Yeah, been away. Teachers become responsible for looking after the kids and they take them there. That's been the case for years.
They're probably going, like I'll just comment on the email I sent to everyone. My phone has been inundated over the last couple of days of a very unhappy community of Aberdeen. And then, you know, I also heard, you know, not through the staff member, and that is the reason why she resigned, because, you know, and that was a third party and it is gossip, but, you know, I wouldn't drive out to Aberdeen for 3 hours work either. You have to make it viable. So it's pretty sad that we have lost a long-standing lifeguard because of that. But then everyone's concerns that I spoke to were people that had a key and that were, you know, a season ticket holder. Their concern was that, you know, one family won't even attend there because the kids are lined up at the fence, the kids that their families can't afford season tickets and that, all those kids are lined up at the fence thinking, why are they all in there? They don't understand that, you know, they got a season ticket and that, and they're the kids that actually do use the pool a lot. So, like, these concerned residents that I spoke to were saying, like, you know, they're refusing to actually go to the pool because it looks so bad. One lady said to me, she knows that if she goes there, there's no way she can say no to them, or she'll be letting them in, and she knows she can't do it. Like, and, you know, one of them said there was, like, 11 kids there the other afternoon, just all lined up on the chain fence looking in, and they, like, said no way. And it was sort of like, well, this man said, it basically comes down to discrimination. There was, you know, all us ticket holders and that were, you know, Anglo-Saxons and whatever, and they were all the little Aboriginal kids outside the pool, and it looked shocking. Like, you know, this fella said to me, and, you know, I know that it wasn't that, but, you know, it can look like that. And it's these kids, it's not their fault that their family can't afford the $280 family season ticket or even the $50 key thing. So.
With the exception of the other organised activities such as water aerobics or the likes, the unsupervised hours are from 6 a.m. until 3 p.m. Booking, say, weekends. Kevin, what are the current hours for weekends for our child?
For unsupervised, it's still 6 a.m. to 8 a.m.
Yep.
On the weekends, it's 11 to 2 with the lifeguard and 3 to 6.
Like 11 to 2, like it's the hottest part of the day. We, you know, between 11 and 3 sit under a tree, and then we're supporting the pool in a lifeguard in that, you know, silly time of the day. Like,
that's similar to what we were operating before, that wasn't it, Kevin? What the point I'm making there is that the unsupervised hours are the times when the children are at school.
Should be at school.
I think their concerns, the phone calls that I got were this week when there was no lifeguard there, so the pool was not opened. That's what I gather.
So difficult for some parents to go and get their certificate so that somebody's there? Somebody can be paid if no one's around? Is it all so difficult? I mean, if somebody's kid was bloody dying because they hit the head in the base of the pool, who's going to jump in and get them? Any parents, or do they all just stand around and look?
Well, it's probably the legality of it and that, and people not wanting to take those responsibilities, because I wouldn't want someone's family suing me in case their kid got hurt, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
What do we got a swimming pool for?
Well, going back, the Kuna pool is my fondest childhood memories, and it was open, you know, all day to 6 o'clock every night, like 11 to 6 every night.
The difficulty that we have had this year has been the recruitment of lifeguards for all of our pools.
Yes.
We have been, from my understanding, we've been constantly advertising our website and Facebook and that, trying to seek lifeguards for the season, and just have not had a lot of people come forward.
And again, I know our smaller communities, it's harder to field people to do it, but then we had a lifeguard coming from Coonabarabran to there. We have to make it viable too, because not one of us in this room would probably drive out to Barrowdean for, I don't know how much an hour they get, but for 3 hours work or something to be, you know, to make it viable.
No, we do it for
now. I suppose there is the issue of, well, okay, someone from Barrowdean can come forward and do the training.
So from this point, to try and prevent a season of nightmares next year, do we have a plan in place for recruiting, training a suitable number next year? Because we always lose any students come universities starting up again.
It's Mandurans.
And that usually affects some of the lifeguards.
Oh, yes, there's no doubt that the events of the last couple of weeks has made us focus more on next season, and instead of recruiting the way we've done in the past, we're looking at different ways of training and recruiting.
So another comment, like I've worked in Gill for 3.5 years, and I know they've only got one swimming pool and that, but their lifeguard is actually employed for 6 months in the pool, or, you know, 5 months in the pool, the rest of the year in the gym. Like, so is there scope that there's any full-time employees that you can do that? Like, you know, shake it up a bit that you're 6 months of the year you're concrete, 6 months of your lifeguard, or, you know, like, put that proposal.
Or Parks and Gardens, or...
Because they're permanent employees and, you know, it is a hard...
Parks and Gardens work for argument's sake. Peak time is your summertime.
That's a few years ago in Barrowdean. They get a job, they go out working in the council jobs through the winter and take on the pool. Max Purdy was one.
How silly an idea would it be when the schools are doing their bronze medallion training and so on and so forth, I suppose they still do, they didn't know it to school, to invite the public to participate for free, so that you've got more people with the prerequisites to stand in as a voluntary lifeguard, or alternatively first aid certification, because if the more people we've got qualified, the bigger a pool we've got to draw from, and the more interested parents you might get. And if you said to these parents when the kids are going swimming doing their gold medal training, bronze medal training, you can go for free and join in, participate and get the qualification. We could build up a resource within the Shire. That's just an idea, I don't know how you'd go with it. But
Louise has had a discussion with the regional manager of Department of Sport and Recreation about running some training schools in this area.
What is the exact qualifications the lifeguards need? Is it just the bronze medallion and CPR, or...?
Through you, Mr Mayor, at this stage, yeah. Kevin, do you want
to...? I understand it's a two-day course, so it certainly covers the life-saving aspects of being a pool attendant, but also water quality testing.
Yeah, because that's what I heard was one of the big problems, is that... The person at Barrowdean was the lawn mowing person, tested the water, cleaned the toilets, did all that sort of stuff. But as I said at the meeting the other night, the Coonabarabran toilets are disgraceful. The change rooms are an absolute mess. They smell like a urinal. And I'm just wondering, do we all have the same job description? Because some did it and some obviously don't do it.
Well, the short answer, Mr. Mayor, is that they all have the same job description.
I suppose this is probably the forum to say after the season finishes, like, is there any way that, and again, I'm probably representing the, you know, the low socio families and that, to have a payment plan for a season ticket.
There is one.
No, you only pay, you pay half and you pay the other half, which is $280 is a big chunk of some of the families I work with, is pay $10 a week starting 1st of April. By the time the pool season's thing, you know, opens, they're paid for their family ticket.
You can certainly look at that.
I think you would have a lot more season tickets sold, because they're the families that are using the pools.
I think the day is not far off because we don't charge at all to go to the bars. A lot of councils are doing it now. Canamble's doing it. Parks are doing it. No charge. It's kind of the pool.
I would love to be able to do something like that as a sweetener to the fiasco that the community's been putting up to. Like, even if it's just a weekend of free pool entry across the shire or something. So, if we have a lifeguard to man it.
That is going to be an issue for us for the remainder of the season.
Me too, by then, when the pool's full.
But it was just pointed out just a moment ago, Warrumbungle Shire has six pools in its local government area that it's got to look after. Many of these other local government areas that we're talking about are only one.
I don't know. We've got 200 staff too there that we could manipulate their job description to be able to man the pools.
Then? And
Louise could go out.
We would be stopping them doing their existing jobs and doing that job.
But then it's probably easier to get, you've got a casual pull for, you know, roads or whatever else. It's probably easier to pull in someone that, you know, there's half a dozen or 10 kids that have gone and done that, you know, their skids ticket the other day, the white card, the whatever else. Easier to put them on stop and go sign than someone with the lifeguard credentials.
I think what we lose in touch with reality a little bit is the council didn't build the pools. The council doesn't own the pools. They were built by public subscription. The council's been landed to the job of looking after them, and now it's getting to the point where council's 100% responsible for the cost of them, because the money collected goes nowhere at all near covering the cost of running them. And John from Elong, that's on the radio every morning, he doesn't give two hoots about bloody swimming pools or anything else. Then why has he got to pay rates for them? And he's got a lot of mates.
Well, he can't help it if Elong hasn't got a pool.
But why does it, all the ratepayers have to subsidise them all the time? They're the biggest cost in every little town we've got. I open them up to the public and say, they're your pool, you use it. We'll come and sweep the floor once a day, get your own lifeguard, nothing to get in. Off you go.
Then you'd need, as I said, you'd need two lifeguards, because so many people would be able to pull one people.
10 lifeguards, if they want to bring them, they can have them. Why should council have to pay for it?
Well, that's how it's all.
Let the users that are using it pay for it, and either that or provide their own, or enter at their own risk.
So has the people at Barrowdene been shown they're happy with the outcome here, are they?
I don't think so. From my phone calls and messages, they're not happy.
Quarter past seven on the ABC this morning, the lady kept talking till 7:30, Mrs. McSomething up in there.
From Barrowdene?
Yes, complaining about...
McConaughey?
I think it might have been that
I
name.
I think you'll find it's also anything on the news tonight.
Oh, really? Tell us you can use it for free, just get your own lifeguard.
Well, I think the only problem was she's got a son of 9 who wanted to practice his swimming because he'd been chosen to go to Canamble for something.
Yeah, for zone or whatever else.
Yeah, something. I don't know anything about all this. Mm. I haven't got any kids to worry about.
Need a mover and a second for this resolution. Mover?
No, it's just...
Mover?
Solved anything? What's the point of it?
Bit of discussion.
We've been here for an extra half hour, and I don't know why we've hung around, actually, because that's not pleasing anybody, as far as I can see. Failure.
Yeah, the meeting closed. If we,
we need a resolution on that.
Moving a second, I couldn't get one.
I'll move that we accept the report.
Councillor Lewis. Councillor Cable. I declare the meeting closed at 9:07.
Bloody hell.
Thank you all.